Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I am delighted and privileged to welcome an iconic journalist, someone who's a legend in the world of writing, someone I have followed for a long time, Mr. Jug Soraya. Jug, welcome to the show.
Jug. Thank you, Ashutosh.
Welcome.
Lovely to be here.
Thank you. Jug is a writer, columnist, cartoonist, and public speaker. He launched the Junior Statesman, which was India's first youth magazine. He's the former editor of the Times of India and has written for several publications. He's published 15 books, and in 2021, he was honored with a knighthood by the President of the Italian Republic. So, Jug, what an amazing career in writing you have had. Let's start with asking you a question. How has journalism evolved and changed over the last five decades?
Well, it's I would say it's been a sweeping change, a sea change. Earlier, when I came into the profession, there was a tendency for the editor and the editorial team to speak down to the readership as though from a pulpit, from a privileged position of having greater knowledge about a subject, more in-depth knowledge about it. That changed. And I think one of the things that happened was that the Junior Statesman magazine, which later became abbreviated to the JS magazine, I think helped to foster that change.
Correct.
It was ahead of its time in many ways. The editor was Desmond Doig, who at that time he was 46 years old. And since this was supposed to be a magazine for young people, he said he would not. He would edit it. He would be the sort of guiding light behind it. But the actual writing would have to be done by young people. So there were three of us, Tabi Bhagat, Papa Menon, and myself. I was 20 years old. I'd just become 20. Papa and Dabi were a couple of years senior to me. So it was just not possible for three people, even if we worked 24/7, to fill 36 pages of a magazine week after week. So we had to depend on contributors. Who were these contributors? They were our readers. So the readers also became the contributors. And this was a kind of a very early avatar of social media, or Facebook. You know, where you consume what you produce yourself. So that really was a forerunner. Amazing. And I think today social media has become a very, very real competitor to mainstream media. And I mean, there you are, here we are having this conversation, which will
very
be on
well
social
said.
Media.
Very, very well said. So, you know, continuing from what you just mentioned, that, you know, there was superstar journalists who would, you know, and I remember growing up reading Khushwant Singh and listening to his reading his thoughts and then forming my opinions based on what he would say. And there were many other such iconic journalist leaders. Today, news has been democratized a lot.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on this democratization of news and each one of us being able to form their own opinions based on news?
Yes. You know, like most things, it can be a mixed blessing. For each individual in a free society, for each individual to be able to make up his or her own mind, I think it's a wonderful thing. There is, however, a lot of false news, misinformation, deliberate disinformation going the rounds. And I think over here, what we need to do is to have a code of self-censorship where, out of respect for one's own integrity, that I will not purvey or convey something which I know to be not an untruth. I think that needs to be done. I think one of the things is, you know, opinion should be free of dogma, I believe. Unfortunately, what is happening, not just in this country, but I think in many other places as well, I think across the world maybe, that we are becoming divided into two or more camps. Mm-hmm. People who are completely for the government of the day,
correct,
and people who are completely against it. And I find this, you know, sometimes when I write a column, I am critical of the current government, as I have been of all governments, you know, in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when this government does something which I think is good, it's for the public good, and I give it a pat on the back, I get outrage from some of my readers, who call themselves liberals, who say, "You become a turncoat. Why have you done this?" And I said, "Look, come on. Let's not put ideological blinkers and you know, hide ourselves from the truth."
Absolutely right. Very well said. Very well said. So moving on, Jag, you know, former editor of Times of India, run magazines. In today's world of technology, some person of my vintage, I'm 65, I still want my newspaper with my morning cup of tea. But I by the time the newspaper arrives at 6:30, I've read all the news on online.
Yes.
I want to ask you, how is news changing with personal devices?
Well, it is. I think news... I think newspapers, in my opinion, are becoming more in the nature of newspapers, in the sense that a particular event happened. How does one interpret this event? And there can be many interpretations. So I think any publication which manages to convey the nuances of a situation, be it an economics, a development, a political development, whatever it is. I think newspapers do have a validity in that role, in that task.
Okay. And do you think the life of newspapers is finite given the amount of effort that goes into producing a newspaper, especially when you have one-liners coming on every particular platform?
Well, I think that there some of the articles, particularly on the editorial page, could stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. You could go back and say, you know, I read that over there. Now, if I can go back to that, that had a few sort of seminal truths, if you like, which would be valid years later.
Okay. So, you know, moving on, you know, you were just speaking about, you know, if you write something pro any government, then this trend seems to be happening all over the world.
Yes.
Journalists have now got aligned, or most journalists have got aligned to one political grouping or the other. What, in your opinion, has caused this? Because as the fourth estate, they have always been completely independent.
Well, I don't know about that, Ashutosh, because, for example, in America, there's a tradition that any given publication, you take the New York Times, they will always be, they will back a particular political party. And this is, I mean, this is done overtly. Now, independent journalists, I think, should remain independent and free of this kind of ideological bias as far as possible.
Correct. Correct. Moving on, there is a completely new generation of readers who have come, categorized as the millennials and the Gen Zs. And they have very, very clear views, opinions of what they want.
Yes.
As someone who's writing even now, I'd love to get your perspective on how are their demands of transparency and true news, etc. How is that changing the way you write?
Well, First of all, you know, what we call millennials, okay, they can see through hokum. They can see, you know, they can see, you know, someone who's who's being bombastic and pompous and, you know, superiors, you know, to the, that kind of an attitude. They don't want to be lectured at. So I think it's the style should be more chatty, should invite them, invite them into a process of shared thought. And there are ways of doing it. First of all, I think for a person who's a columnist, who's a regular writer, when people ask me that, how do you get your ideas? I say, well, you give them to me because I listen. I listen to what people are saying. People of all ages, people of all interests, and so it is. It is a kind of a feedback. I give back. I try to give back to my potential reader what I've heard from them in conversation, in casual conversation, or something which I've just happened to hear. And what is interesting them? What are they talking about? What are their views? And I try to put this together, and I try to understand this, and I try to explicate it for myself and for them.
Interesting. So one more question related to writing, and then I'll move to Italy and then your books. And could have talked about Junior Statesman, which was such an iconic magazine. What happened to JS, and what were some of the problems of continuing it?
Oh dear. You know, the JS lasted for a little over 10 years.
Yeah.
The first issue came out in 67. I think it was February the 14th, if I'm not mistaken. And it was killed prematurely, put to death through summary execution by the then managing director of the Statesman. It was in August 1977.
Okay.
I think it was a result of a clash of personalities. Desmond Doig, as editor of the JS, had become a bigger public persona than the managing director of the Statesman. And I think that caused some problems.
Wow. Well, you know, I grew up reading JS. And I remember those 5 or 6 part center spread with Zila Taman, etc. And if today someone was to ask me which was the magazine that you would remember the most, the first thing top of the mind is JS. You know, so I must compliment you. I'm sure people will think about it forever. But moving on now, Jag, you have been awarded a knighthood by the President of the Italian Republic. I'd like to understand from you, what was it that got you connected with Italy, and what was the award for?
Okay. Buddy and I, my wife and I, we first visited Italy way back in 73. We were on a shoestring budget. We spent a year and a half in the United Kingdom working. The idea being that we wanted to see a little bit of Europe, see a little bit of the Western world. And so we saved up some money and we began to tour Europe. And we go to Italy. It was a sort of a shoestring budget.
Right.
And we didn't have any hotel reservations, nothing, very little money.
Yeah.
But the kindliness, the friendliness of the people that we met. We couldn't speak any Italian, but people would go out of their way to help us find our bearings, to help us find a cheap pension to live in, find a cheap bistro to eat in. And there was such a genuine warmth of welcome that both Bonnie and I, we fell in love with Italy. We loved its people, their friendliness. They made us feel part of their family, part of the Italian family. We love their food and their wine and their music.
Yeah.
So we We went back to Italy many times after that.
Mm.
Fortunately, with a little more expansive budget.
Correct.
And I began to write about it naturally, as I would write about anything else that I experienced. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And when some of these articles came to the attention mm-hmm. of the Italian embassy in Delhi,
mm-hmm.
they began to think of me as some sort of an unofficial brand ambassador for their country.
Okay.
And I think that's where that's why I was awarded this.
Hmm. And you, when I was reading about you, you said we have been going back at least twice a year.
Yes, we were before this pandemic hit. Yes.
And the knighthood was given because of your writing?
That's right, yes.
Wonderful.
Yes. I would just like to make one thing clear,
yeah.
if I may.
Yeah, yeah.
I accepted the knighthood mm. because while Bunny and I love Italy, mm. we're not Indian. We're not Italian citizens. We're Indians.
Yeah.
If for any unearthly reason, I'm sure it's never going to happen,
mm.
if our government, mm. not just this present government, mm. but any government of India mm. were to offer me some sort of a public recognition like that, I would turn it down.
Okay.
For the very simple reason mm. that then I would feel bounded in my own conscience,
mm.
not for anything else,
mm.
not just for the sake of the public image, mm. my own conscience, that having accepted something like this,
mm.
could I in future ever be critical of this government? But yes. since I am not involved with Italy politically,
mm.
I feel no qualms on that score.
Very interesting. So one more question, given the amount of travel that you have done to Italy. What are your thoughts on India and Italy at an economic level? We leave politics out.
I'm sorry? Yeah,
What are your thoughts on the relationships between India and Italy at an economic level?
At the economic level, well, I'm told that there's some 600 odd mm. Italian companies of various sizes in various sectors mm. are operating in India.
Mm.
There's a very, very large community of Punjabi farmers,
mm.
mainly Sikhs,
mm.
who are in the dairy business over there, and all this mozzarella and stuff that comes,
mm.
they produce it. So you know,
mm.
They're supporting the entire sort of pizza and pasta industry of Italy.
amazing. So now I'm going to move to your books.
Yes,
you've written 15 books. Tell me about some of these books and any favorites that you have?
These are all sort of byblows of my mind mm. and one can't disown any of them.
Absolutely.
If you would say one of my favorites, well, there are two books of short stories.
Mm.
There's a book which was first published by Penguin India mm. called Rickshaw Ragtime. Mm-hmm. Which is about sort of my memories of Calcutta.
Mm.
That was actually a compilation of feature articles which I did for the Statesman after the JS had been closed down.
Correct.
I joined the Statesman and as a feature writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to write about various aspects of Calcutta.
Mm.
And I put those together and I added linking passages.
Mm-hmm.
And the book became Rickshaw Ragtime. It's my personal tribute, if you like, mm-hmm. to a Calcutta which I knew and which I loved.
Amazing.
So that's one of my favorite books.
Amazing. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, when you've written many books, so you can't say this is my favorite child or this is my... But
yes.
There is still some one book that you would not say that I worked the hardest on that.
Yes.
So, Jag, I'm going to move to the last segment of our conversation. My... viewers and listeners love to get to know my guest personally. Yes. And you are such an iconic personality. My first question to you is, as you look back at life, what would you say are three key milestones or pivot points that you remember?
Well, I suppose the first was the my joining the Junior Statesman, which was to become the JS.
Mm.
You know, after I left college,
mm.
I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Okay.
in college, like a lot of people, you know, I dabbled a bit in what I thought of was poetry.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't really a writer as such. But when the Junior Statesman magazine was looking around for writers,
mm-hmm.
I tried my hand at writing, and I found that I seemed to have a certain knack for it,
mm-hmm.
and I decided that that was going to be my career for life.
Mm.
So I would say yes, that was it.
Okay. Again, you look back, and you're one of the senior writers in our country who have stood a lot by what you have believed in. And even today, you've articulated some very interesting points. My question to you, Jag, would be, what are some of the core values you have always believed in?
Okay. I was once when I was asked to address a class of trainee journalists,
mm-hmm.
I took an article which had been published that day,
mm-hmm.
and which carried the byline. And I said, I asked the class, I said, I want you to look at this article very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to think that you are the author of that byline.
Mm-hmm.
Now, please tell me the two most important words in this article.
Mm-hmm.
And the two most important words were the name that appeared on the byline. Mm-hmm. I said, those are the two most important words, not from the viewpoint of ego, please, mm-hmm. not from that.
Yeah.
But if you remain true to that,
mm-hmm.
if you remain true to that,
mm-hmm.
then you will be a good journalist.
How amazing.
That's your integrity.
How amazing.
That's your stamp of excellence, of a guarantee that what you see here is the real thing.
Amazing. I've got time for two more questions. My next question is that, as you again, you look back, what does success mean to Jag?
I don't know about success, but it's a very humbling feeling.
Correct.
Because I don't feel that I've been able to live up to the expectations that perhaps,
mm-hmm.
My readers have of me.
Okay.
I don't think I ever will be able to.
Okay. That is a humbling statement, given your where you have reached in the world of journalism. And my last question to you, Jag, is who or what inspires you?
Who or what inspires me? My best critic, my sharpest critic, is my wife, Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get a nod from her after, mm-hmm. you know, when she's just read something which I've written, mm-hmm. I say, okay, I passed the test.
Yes, well said. Well said. Jag, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me.
Thank you
for talking to me about your incredible journey as a journalist, as a columnist, as a cartoonist. Thank you for talking to me at such length about Italy and everything that you've done for Italy. And from on a personal note, thank you for giving the JS to the world when it needed it the most. Thank you again.
Thank you, Ashutosh.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.